scientists spend about 40 to 60% of their time on non-value added work, like tracking things via paper and reading things off of paper, not having access to the data that they need, working in various siloed systems. So with that mindset, our focus really has always been about aiding the scientist. And so through that, we've been able to incorporate different modalities into the LabVoice platform as well. Things like OCR and barcode scanning. And on top of that, I think we all know the science itself is getting increasingly complex. And I would say that we want to support the groundbreaking cutting edge research that is shaping both the present and future of not just life sciences industries, but all science-based industries.
Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast, where you can learn from entrepreneurs and investors who are driving progress in healthcare and life science around the globe. Hi there, I'm Alex Merwin, Head of Growth for Healthcare and Life Sciences Startups at AWS. Today's episode features a company that is transforming how scientists interact with their lab equipment and data. LabVoice has developed the hands-free voice assistant that meets the unique needs of scientists working in the lab. Their innovative solution provides seamless human-to-lab interaction, enabling scientists to execute tasks and access information through voice commands while keeping their hands free to focus on their work. Joining us is Steve Sakarosa-McCoy, Head of Sales at LabVoice. In our conversation, Steve will share insights into LabVoice's founding story, the vision behind their voice-assisted workflow, and how they are empowering scientists to make groundbreaking discoveries more efficiently. Our host for this episode is Eric Zimmerman, Principal Healthcare and Life Sciences BD, Venture Capital, and Startups at AWS. Eric's experience in the industry will guide our exploration of LabVoice's impact and the future of voice-enabled labs. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. I'm excited to guest host this session today. My name is Eric Zimmerman, and I lead our work with venture-backed healthcare and life science startups and investors at AWS. My background was originally on the bioengineering side, and then I spent about a decade at various venture firms, investing in early-stage biotech platforms and growth-stage health tech companies. I'm thrilled to be joined today by Steve McCoy of LabVoice. I had the pleasure of working with Steve's previous company, Tetra Science, who were also featured on this podcast, and have gotten to know Steve since he joined LabVoice just about 4 years ago. Steve, welcome. Let's dig in, and I'm looking forward to learning more about LabVoice and the future of scientific virtual assistants. So let's start at the beginning. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you ended up at LabVoice.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for having me, Eric. But in terms of my background, I had started my career in sales and wasn't really sure where I wanted to go. I fell backwards into my first job out of college. I wisely chose history as my degree with the mindset of becoming a history teacher and then decided against it. But as the time at my first job wrapped up, I ended up finding Tetra Science, as you alluded to, on Angel's List. And I remember thinking, if the need for automation and modern user-friendly software is as great as they say it is, I wanted to go along for that ride and help out scientists. I think like a lot of people who enter the industry, the idea of working, you know, side by side with scientists and helping them find life-changing therapies is something that motivates a lot of us here. So fast forward 4 years after joining Tetra Science, and I had a friend who introduced me to LabVoice CEO, Fred Bost, and it sounded like they were onto something pretty interesting. Again, I remember thinking about Fred's claims and saying, if benchtop work data collection is as hard as they say it is, it's something that I want to get behind. What I think was really appealing about LabVoice is, as we'll discuss when we get into this, is that it's a very end user oriented tool. It doesn't sit in the background. It requires the scientist to interact with it. We get to work firsthand with those people, which is why I had wanted to join the industry in the first place. So it was a natural next step as I journey through life sciences software.
Was there anything in particular that like really drove you to the healthcare life sciences space from history? Because that's a big jump. And again, I think a lot of people are interested in the space, but like you put your money where your mouth is, so to speak.
I think it was just along the lines of, a lot of family members and friends have been impacted by disease and other issues that the life sciences space has really gone and been able to address. And I had a good foundational layer on the commercial side of things, you know, of building relationships and working through deals and pitching novel concepts to folks. So I figured that I could get brought up to speed rather quickly on some of the high level science. I don't pretend to know anything about some of the more intricate details. And with that, I was able to get my foot in the door into the life sciences industry.
I love it. Okay. So let's talk about LabVoice. I'm always interested in the founding stories of companies and how they've evolved over the years, because as much as we all wish, they're never up and to the right in a straight line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please just tell me the story as one of the key members of the growth team.
Sure. So I had joined shortly after, about a year and a half after the company was officially founded. And that was done by two folks who had extensive experience in the industry. So one of our co-founders, Matt Hahn, who's currently the LabVoice chairman, was the founder of Cytegic and a product called Pipeline Pilot. I think more people will know the Pipeline Pilot product name, which was used to help break down data silos in these life sciences organizations. Fred had founded Heos, which was a cloud-first ELN when cloud-based ELNs weren't really a thing. Both of those companies were eventually acquired by Dassault Systems under the Biovia brand. And I think Pipeline Pilots kept its name. Heos is now called Science Cloud. And that's where Fred and Matt met. And the way that Matt tells it is it's as simple as most folks might think, is with the emergence of tools like Siri and Alexa and Google Home, it was a thought of why couldn't scientists use voice technology when they're working at their bench or in a fume hood or in a vivarium. Matt, I know, has several echoes around his home and put that idea into practice. And that's how LabVoice was born.
Nice. And so would you say that's the original core thesis was all around scientists using voice technologies, or because people were getting more common with the other kind of voice automation or technology systems? Has that thesis or insight stayed the same over the years, or how has that changed if it has?
It has stayed there. You know, voice is in the name of the company, and I don't really imagine it going away, especially as we talk about adding observations or qualitative assessments of work that's being done in the lab. But I do think that the driving factors of the company have changed a little bit, and slightly that I was recently at Lab of the Future Congress, and I think it was Accenture who mentioned and brought up the stat, and there's all sorts of variants on this, but that scientists spend about 40 to 60% of their time on non-value added work, like tracking things via paper and reading things off of paper, not having access to the data that they need, working in various siloed systems. So with that mindset, our focus really has always been about aiding the scientist. And so through that, we've been able to incorporate different modalities into the LabVoice platform as well, things like OCR and barcode scanning. And on top of that, I think we all know the science itself is getting increasingly complex. And I would say that we want to support the groundbreaking cutting edge research that is shaping both the present and future of not just life sciences industries, but all science-based industries. So it's really been about how do we use technology to create a much more seamless experience for scientists when shifting between lab and desk work? How do we cut down on some of the data drudgery of their day to day? So part of the focus too of the platform has been making it as easy as possible to integrate. So we partner with a lot of popular scientific software vendors, Benchling, Dotmatics, Rockstep Solutions, IDBS, Ticket Lab, and many others to help bridge the gap both between recalling and accessing information, as well as capturing data at the point of creation when in the lab. So at the end of the day, I think that really the core thesis is using technology to be very end user focused. And we revolve a lot of our time and efforts around making a better platform for scientists to use.
As I hear you speak, I think a lot about Amazonian principles that this sort of aligns with the idea of customer obsession and really thinking about the true end user, but then also focusing on getting rid of what we would call undifferentiated heavy lifting, right?
Yes.
There's things that take up a lot of people's time that are disproportionate to the value that they add. And the more freedom, flexibility they have to do the really high value work that these MDs or PhDs or scientists or clinicians are trained to do and true world experts on, the better, faster, cheaper they can actually develop drugs that will ultimately get into patients.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing that also caught my ear was your integration with third-party solutions. I think there's been a lot of point solutions in the space that are trying to help create more of a connected lab, so to speak, or help with lab automation. But it's nice to see a group really try to bring together disparate solutions and focus on more of a holistic data strategy and I'll call it scientist empowerment strategy. Could you speak a little bit to what that thesis was for the company?
Yeah.
Work.
It is. And I think even in, to use the term like connected lab, even in the most connected lab, we still see scientists who are capturing data using thumb drives, having colleagues as scribes, whiteboards, sticky notes, back of gloves, and worst case scenario, just remembering the data. Even after that point, once they've collected the data, like software platforms still very much are siloed and limited to a single point of access, which is the laptop or your desktop. And so it requires people to go back and forth through these systems. And I think although the science itself has very much advanced into the 21st century, the scientist has been left behind in that process. So we see some more concrete examples of this disconnect that we see regularly are things like printing out sample manifests with hundreds of entries, as it's more convenient than moving back and forth between a laptop screen and crossing those off as they've been accessioned or collected. Using gloves, right, again, to get characteristics of reagents and putting those into ELNs. Working in pairs in a vivarium so you have a set of clean hands and dirty hands as people are manually entering animal measurements or capturing surgical observations while another person handles the specimen. Taking hands out of your glove box, degloving, sanitizing, just to record something, a single data point down into a notebook. And I think what we see is these inconveniences are minor, but they compound the more frequently they happen. And those do things like create productivity bottlenecks. We inadvertently encouraging shortcuts rather than following, you know, the GXP protocols or the compliance and regulation that's in place. And ultimately, that impacts the quality of the data, which a lot of these companies that we work with, they are data companies. Their product is the data itself more so than the actual therapy that they're delivering in some ways. So the angle that we came from was that the modern laboratory is needed of a modern orchestration layer to assist scientists to use more easily an ever-increasing variety of software and instrumentation. So our process really gets involved in working side by side with scientists to really understand their lab workflows so we can build that orchestration with some of those lab assistants. We'll shadow process, we'll do that remotely or in person. We'll ask lots of questions back and forth, get into the flow of things, and then turn that into what we call a lab flow or these digitally assisted lab flow workflows that end up streamlining these processes. And as a result, again, impacting data for the better in that process.
I'd be curious. It obviously makes a lot of sense why a lab manager or a full R&D team would be interested in that modern orchestration layer. But I'd be curious, if you focus on the individual scientist for a second, is there like an aha moment they have with the platform or software? Or is there one moment that you usually see where people start using it or they just get it and all of a sudden it just makes it that much stickier or real or tangible?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I think most people, when they come to LabVoice, are thinking about a single process that they have in mind where voice would be really handy for them. So just using somebody that we've been working with recently that comes to mind, they're looking through a microscope and capturing and doing readouts of values, but basically just saying positive or negative, whereas before they'd be running down a plus sign or a minus sign. And as they get into the flow of things and we start to have more and more conversations with them, what they ultimately realize is that while implementing a tool like LabVoice for that process does deliver some return on their investment in the near term, it's really about the compounding effect as they look at more workflows across their lab. So this person came to us and originally had that use case in mind, but then they were thinking, I go into the lab and I forget to place order for things all the time. And by the time I get back and realize that I actually need it, what ends up happening is my work is delayed because I don't have the tips or the gloves that I need to perform this process. And sometimes the reverse of that, like they have boxes and boxes of plates just sitting around their lap. So it really becomes this, to get to the aha moment, it really is once they use LabVoice and find it as a reliable aid in their work day to day, when they start thinking of other applications that they can apply it to, this process has really been like a lot of self-discovery. That's where we really see the technology take root and spread within the organization. It's true for others as well. We see a lot of their peers who are to get involved with LabVoice. Everybody's had experiences with Siri and Alexa mishearing what they said. So what we're able to do is basically have this internal proof of concept or this internal case study. And once people see that it works out well for one or two or three of their colleagues, then they're much more open to the idea of using LabVoice and take off from there.
And how long does an initial deployment take, whether it be a POC or kind of just initial rollout?
So in terms of the technology side, this is a rather simple question. It's literally hours. So the devices, or the digital assistant, I should say, is available on any iOS or Android device. So you literally download an app, you enroll your voice the same way you do when you're setting up your voice assistants at home. And from there, you have access to the platform. In terms of taking that process and turning it into a lab flow, that also takes a matter of hours, in some cases more, depending on how complex the process is, because we have this really intuitive low code design tool, which we've aptly named the designer, that allows people to build processes and edit and add to them over time rather quickly. So that takes hours. But like with any technology, really the trick is the change management component. And how do we overcome some of the barriers to adoption that we see regularly and coach some of the end users to really trust in LabVoice and make it a part of their data net? That takes a little bit more time, but somewhere over the course, I would say that we normally estimate between like 4 and 6 weeks before users are really off and running without any handholding through that process.
I mean, even 4 to 6 weeks, that's an incredible timeline. It sounds pretty great. I'd be curious, part of why I was so excited to have y'all on the podcast is I think that y'all have done a particularly interesting or impressive job selling into life science companies, R&D companies, both small other startups, but also some of the largest top pharmas in the world. What are some of the keys to doing this successfully that other entrepreneurs and scientists and clinicians can learn from your success? Is it just a rapid deployment model with an easy POC? Is it just that there's an aha moment? Is it pricing constructs? Is it just that this space is so broken that they'll take anything? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. First, I have to say that like having an incredible product to represent really makes this my job a lot easier. So we have been lucky to assemble a great team of engineers that not only are 3x or 10x what some other engineering teams can output, but they think things through thoughtfully. So a lot of the design of the LabVoice platform has been done with some of those challenges that you've mentioned before in mind. And so things like making the solution as lightweight as possible, making it to easily adapt to the existing infrastructure. So that's both in the mode of access through, again, iOS and Android devices that are commonly found in people's pockets or as kiosks in the lab, or integrating with systems and software that teams are using regularly in this space. To take BenchLink, for example, it's one of the more common integration requests that we get. And as soon as people realize that we can build that integration, it makes them adopting it a lot easier. So that's certainly been something too. And I think another facet, if you're talking about the more sales and marketing side, is patience and education. Going back 5 years, I've already seen like quite an increase already in terms of the number of companies that are willing and ready to accept the idea of using a digital lab assistant or a voice assistant in the lab compared to where we were back in 2018 and in 2020 when I joined. So it's been quite a ride, but to get to that point, we've had to put out a lot of content to make sure that people see that the product works. One of the things that we do quite regularly is that if people have an idea of a process that they would like to use LabVoice for, is chances are we already have something pretty similar, but we can take it an even step further and turn that workflow of theirs into this interactive demo for them as well. And we do that rather quickly. Again, in a matter of hours, we're able to turn those around. Aligning people's calendars is a different story. But getting people to see the product in action and addressing many of those concerns that they have head on have cleared the way to make this readily adopted in both large pharma all the way down to startup biotechs.
I've seen a lot of those trends as well. It's really amazing how many advancements both small and large biotech companies are really making on the early stage R&D process, whether it be integrating AI ML more into their workloads or workflows, whether it be computational chemistry, structural and synthetic biology. It's pretty cool to go back 5 years till now and see the advancements of pure research and science.
Yeah, absolutely. We get that quite a bit where I'm circling back now with folks that I had initial conversations with, and they're just amazed by the number of use cases that we've been able to incorporate in the platform. There's certainly what you're able to do with Designer is really take anything into account, but we've also found some areas that just make sense for the presence of a digital lab assistant. I mentioned a lot of these already, but managing all types of inventory, sample, compounds, reagents, various consumables in the lab, working in vivo scenarios with animal specimens, which really helps improve the biosecurity for both the scientist as well as the animal themselves. By working hands-free, you're able to cut down on contamination that otherwise would be introduced through pen and paper or maybe keyboards. Working in the GXP space, where adherence to regulation and compliance is the utmost importance, and documenting what you're doing in real time as well. So it's been interesting to see their change in tune, I should say, from when we first started talking to where they are now. I think another characteristic that I've noticed as well is, especially at the large pharma stage, a lot of these companies have teams that are dedicated to innovation or lab of the future or digitalization, and they're ready and willing to help vendors like ourselves get into motivated, interested end user scientists to trial out the system, collect metrics, and then report back on the success, and then determine whether or not it's something viable for a larger group of participants.
So let's fast forward 5 or 10 years. I know we just talked a little bit about the retrospective and where the industry has come to today, but let's talk about the future. How do you think drug discovery and a modern or lab of the future looks different?
So I certainly think there's always going to be a need for a human and a scientist. So take that before I get into some of these thoughts. But there's really two themes that I harp on when asked a question like this. So for one, I hope by then interoperability issues between various vendors, both on the software and instrument side, have been overcome. I've heard this talking point since the earliest days of Tetra Science.
Yep.
And that's something that we hear. That's what that company was founded to overcome in a lot of ways. We hear it a lot at industry conferences and events. You know, it's reused year after year. But anecdotally, I do feel that more vendors are working to build more robust APIs or even API first. And they're strongly considering various industry standard for data formats. And it's more and more we hear of these companies aligning with FAIR data principles. So I would hope in 10 years, we've certainly solved that. I also believe that the ELN and LIMS of the world, as we know them today, will look very different. So I don't think they're going anywhere. Tools like LabVoice, AR systems, interoperable integrated systems, simple user interfaces, scientists are actually going to spend less time entering that data. So thinking of an ELN as a means for a scientist to input their study results directly or manually is going to be something of the past or of this day. I think that information too stored there is going to be readily available whenever needed, again, through systems like I've mentioned. And what these ELNs and LIMS are going to look like are more data-centric tools that are analysis ready rather than, again, these interfaces to scientists to document what they're doing. Since so much of this should be automatically documented.
So do you think the life sciences space is ready to fully embrace AI, generative AI, AR, VR, audio assistants? Do you think they've already embraced it? Do you think it'll still take a few more years? What do you think?
Yes, I do. And I think there's a number of examples I can't share where groups are already embracing it. And I forget who said it, but there's a line that humans tend to overestimate what technology and innovation can do for us in the first 2 to 3 years of its existence, and then underestimate its impact over a couple of decades. So I think it's tough to imagine what exactly that could be like if we're looking 10 years down the road. But I do know a lot of our partners are currently looking at AI or generative AI solutions as a means for knowledge management. The industry is so document heavy for compliance reasons and for reproducibility reasons that using a ChatGPT-like interface to query information, make that information available to scientists is a very natural starting point. And I know a lot of folks are already looking at tools like that. And so I would think other areas, maybe more operationally focused, things like supply chain management, building recipes, equipment maintenance and management, these are all on the horizon if there are not solutions or products already in the mix for those. Selfishly, I would hope that we could have a digital generative AI assistant for every scientist at that point in the future.
It would be pretty cool. Looking towards the rest of this year, where do you hope LabVoice exits 2024 and goes into 2025? I'm going to leave it super broad, but what's that vision for this year? I always like to hear the roadmap for startups.
Yeah, we have a lot of exciting things on the product roadmap that we're hoping to implement. In addition to iOS and Android, we've been looking at a Windows 11 version as well to, again, align the technology to make it as easily as you can to implement it. But at the end of the day, what I'm really hoping for is that we get more feedback from our end users saying that we have made XYZ as easy as possible for them, or we've been able to radically transform the way that they go and think about operating. Our really focus as a company is growth, but that growth should come in the form of end users and people adopting the platform. So for success for us really looks about is gathering many as people as possible, regularly using a digital lab assistant in their labs, their vivariums, their greenhouses, wherever it's deployed. Again, impacting for the better and eliminating a lot of the menial tasks of their day-to-day.
I love hearing all of this end user talk. And I did see, I should have started with a congratulations, the TIDES project, Transforming Information with Digital Experimental Solutions, that Regeneron was recognized for by BioIT. I saw that press release just came out highlighting their project with y'all. It seemed LabVoice was able to capture a bunch of data points, both automated and manual, and really improve the speed of science there.
Yeah, the TIDES team in particular is a great group to work with, and they're very thoughtful around the type of innovation and digitalization that they've been able to introduce. They do work that extends well beyond just LabVoice, and it was exciting to see that recognition of more so the team. Of course, again, I'm happy about the product as well, but really the team and the effort that they've been put in and able to be seen by the wider industry.
That's great recognition. As we wrap up today and you think back on our conversation, what question will you wish that I had asked you? What did I miss?
Yeah, you did touch upon it already, but one of the things that comes to mind, I think, when talking about digital lab assistants, AR, and maybe to a more complex extent, AI, but is getting the technology into the hands of interested parties. I think one thing that we see quite a bit is a reluctance to test out because there's misconceptions about how much effort it takes to get technology like this under the way. So while I'm not saying that this is something that you can install overnight and have hundreds of people using the next day, I think what I would want to say is that working with a core team that's connected to scientists makes this a lot easier than it may seem on the surface. And giving that those technologies, right, a shot to change how the way scientists, lab operations, technicians go about their day-to-day is something that's worthwhile. And I think there's immediate ROI to be had there.
Thank you, Steve, so much for joining us. I'll give you one more chance, parting thoughts. Do you have any words of advice for fellow entrepreneurs looking to drive innovation in the life sciences or anything else that you want our listeners to take away from LabVoice or your experiences?
Yeah, I think the key really is patience and education. We're working with a very educated, inquisitive group of people So by their very nature, they're going to want to learn as much as possible before using technology. So I think taking the time to really think what answers could potential end users be looking for and getting those to them in as much time as possible is really going to be critical to your success.
So you're saying the patience is a virtue isn't just a cliche. It does apply here as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Fair enough. Thank you again, Steve, for joining us.
Thanks for joining us today for the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. If you want to get in touch with AWS, please check out our show notes where you can find a link. If you enjoy the podcast, the best way to support us is to share it with your colleagues and friends. We also really appreciate your reviews and ratings wherever you listen to podcasts. We love hearing feedback from our listeners, so please don't hesitate to get in touch. Again, you'll find all the details in our show notes. See you next week.